There is no dark side in the moon, really. Matter of fact, it's all dark.
You want some sexy? You want to laugh? License to Talk.
License to Talk is brought to you by First in Buffalo. Fireman owned and operated, custom apparel, custom hats, 389 Abbott Road. Get your custom gear at First in Buffalo. Dog Ears Bookstore. Stop into the cafe and bookstore and enjoy a welcoming hometown atmosphere, all while supporting programs that spread creativity and literacy throughout South Buffalo and beyond. Don't get your coffee from Timmy when you can get it from Tommy. Charlie's Boatyard, 1111 Furman Boulevard. Come and enjoy a nice cold drink and a beautiful sunset.
All right, Jim, if you're ready, I think we're good. Our levels look good.
Okay. All right, Marky, episode 92. We're here with Kevin Williams. He's a director of Whitworth Ferguson Planetarium at Buff State. He's a space nerd. Kev, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
Kev. Most popular guy in Buffalo right now, right?
Yeah.
maybe.
And Kev's all about the eclipse. The eclipse, when's it coming up? Give us.
April 8th. We're getting really close.
April 8th. And this, what's today?
The 28th.
28th. So we got time.
Tomorrow for the Bisons.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we have time, but it's running out.
It's running out, and the last time this happened in Buffalo, 1925. Correct?
Exactly. Yep. Do you remember that?
No. Is there anyone alive? Is there anyone alive from then?
Not that I've run into.
Because they wouldn't know what was going on if they were alive, right?
Yeah, they would have been a baby.
Yeah, they would have been a baby. I wonder if they found.
Yeah. There's a couple people. They would have been children, right?
Yeah. I wondered, you always see those news stories connected. Yeah. You would think that that's come up, maybe.
Who was the last guy who live called the eclipse?
Because you're the new play-by-play guy.
Oh. Yeah. Who are you taking over for?
I'm not sure about that. Back in 1925, I don't think they did that. And actually, I don't know if you realize this, but in 1925, it was cloudy here in Buffalo. Oh, yeah. So I think that's a good sign because it means that we're owed good weather for April 8th.
What's the prediction right now for the weather?
I don't think we can really predict it at this point. No. You know, with the weather here, there's a forecast for tomorrow and it changes. So
yeah.
I think over the last few days, I've been looking at the weather for April 8th, but it's been all over the place. So I think we won't really know until that morning, maybe.
Who's your guy you're going with? Do you got a guy?
I don't have a guy.
Who's the weather guy that you're going to go with and stick with?
I think my own eyes just looking at it.
Well, yeah, just from living in the area, you've realized living in the Northeast, it's very unpredictable. Yeah. So you just be prepared and get ready to have some fun. And let's tell us where to have some fun on April 8th.
Well, hopefully a lot of people will be joining me having fun at Buffalo State. We're hosting Eclipse Fest, so it runs from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock in the afternoon, actually starting at noon with some food trucks. But folks will come in. There's bleachers at the football field. That's where the seating will be. We'll have a stage with entertainment and information. XOXO pop band from here in Buffalo. They're going to be performing. They're our main entertainment. We'll also have activities for kids and people of all ages. Everyone gets like a bunch of swag, like a reusable bag, a commemorative T-shirt, some other souvenirs that we're not really telling them what that's going to be yet. Some surprises.
Sounds like a great time.
Yeah, so it's going to be a party. And, you know, it should be because this is a once-in-a-lifetime event. You want to have fun. You want to experience this amazing event. And, you know, do it with your 2,000 closest friends.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and 2,000 people is your max there?
We're actually maxing out at, like, 2,500.
Okay. Yeah. And what is the expected amount of people to be coming to the area?
Wow. You may have heard estimates of might see as many as 1 million people coming to Western New York, you know, spread out over a few the whole area. But it's hard to say. But I think these predictions aren't way off because we have the benefit of having a total solar eclipse here in the United States back in 2017. Right. It wasn't here in Buffalo, of course, but we've been connecting with places that were along the path of totality and learning from their experiences and some things that they might have done differently. One of the lessons was that there should be lots of different options for people to do, whether they're residents or visitors. And it's great to see that there are so many places around having events on the day.
So you're the guy on the ground and you're the guy looking in the sky. you got a lot going on for you. Because you're researching what happened in Nashville? Am I going to say that?
Nashville was one of the areas.
Yeah.
So you're going back, probably learning from, you know, other professors and things like that, of what to expect. And what are you telling people when they look at it with the glasses? And thanks for bringing the glasses. We're going to hook up the staff here at Charlie's Boatyard with these guys and some kids, so they'll go to good use. Tell us what we're going to be looking at here, because I've learned more in the last 2 days researching space and getting ready for you, Kev, than I ever in schooling.
So you're doing your homework, right?
I've done my homework today. This is going to be fun.
Well, I guess one thing I like to remind people is that even though we focus on those few minutes of totality when the sun is totally blocked by the moon, the entire eclipse lasts about 2.5 hours. So you really want to plan for that. You know, you want to make sure that you're seeing the sun through your eclipse glasses just as the moon starts to cover it, and then check in on it as more and more of the sun gets covered between about 2:05 and 3:18. That's going to be that first, what we call a partial eclipse phase.
Right.
There are other things you can do. You may have heard about pinhole projectors, where you put a small hole in a piece of cardboard or something, and you can sort of trace the shape of the sun and note the time as you go through those different phases. There are other activities you can do with it. But once the eclipse starts a little after 2, we're not going to notice a big difference right away. Like, it's not going to get dark right away or anything like that. That's why we need the eclipse glasses to watch that partial phase. But around 3 o'clock, you know, 15 minutes or so before totality, we'll start to notice some other changes. You know, the world will start to get weird.
What do you mean?
I like
by that
you use the word weird instead of like that. Something technical. Like,
no, this is
hazy a little bit, like kind of like what, like it, I'd say like in a June night, like 8:55. Is that what it's going to look? Some people have told me that.
It's more like, say, half an hour to 45 minutes after sunset will be what it will look like during totality. But even before that, like, I guess like 10 to 15 minutes before, the sky will be bright, but it will get a little dull, which sounds weird that it would be bright but dull. Yeah. But actually, Charles Birchfield described it as being kind of a leaden coloring to it. Like, it just, like you turn down the brightness a little bit, right?
Yeah.
As you're getting down to less and less of the sun showing. But then you'll also notice the color changing a little bit, maybe a little bit orangish. The shadows might become sharper, so you'll look around for the shadows. You'll start to notice the temperature drop, because remember, we don't just get sun light from the sun, but we also get heat. And that's something that surprises a lot of people, is that temperature change.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So something I've been telling people, too, is that if you're dressing for that day, if you're not going to be at your house, make sure you bring an extra layer, because it can get 10 to 20 degrees cooler during totality. So you want to have that extra layer to keep you warm.
Of all this I've heard in these tips, that's the best one I've heard.
Yeah.
Like, you go to an ATM, and people thought, why? Well, the ATMs are going to work. It's just going to be dark.
What is the point of that?
They think they're going to be empty because there's so many people coming into the area.
Right. There are those logistical things, right?
Yeah.
Like, go to an ATM, do your grocery shopping, and get gas in your car before.
You should do that anyways.
It's kind of like a big snowstorm, right?
Yeah.
You're going to do all those things because you can't get out that day. But we've had years to prepare for it.
You know what? I want to see people going to events like, you know, the one at Coriel Field. I want to see people at Pilot Field. I want to see this. It's a once-in-a-lifetime, and I would love to see these businesses really cash in and have a great time. And you got to be real busy with educating. You probably got classrooms coming in and out on field trips, don't you?
Just a few thousand.
No, the old field trips.
We're actually really, it's been a lot of fun, because we've partnered with Buffalo Public Schools, and thanks to M&T, we've been bringing in all of the fourth graders in Buffalo Public Schools to the planetarium to learn about the eclipse.
That's
and
great.
All of the high school earth science classes. So it's really since the beginning of November, they've been coming in almost every day. And then going out and doing some outreach and talking to other folks.
And you guys are pretty new, right? The center, right?
Yeah, the planetarium we opened up to the public in fall of 21. So yeah, just a couple of years that we've been open.
What's
so
the what nickname you guys got for it?
The nickname?
Yeah, what's your nickname for it?
We call it a dome, just because that's the planetarium
the dome.
But other people call it a golf ball.
Oh, really?
The Ferguson.
A lot of people call it the Ferguson.
All right.
What's the unique special things that you have there?
I like to tell people that we kind of have the best of both worlds in terms of the projectors that we have. So we have the traditional star projector that projects the stars into the planetarium that really shows the night sky in an amazing way, but we also have a digital system so we can fly through the universe. We can show immersive programs that are kind of like movies that surround you. We have laser music shows, you know, something for everybody.
You've had some Pink Floyd events down there.
Yeah, Pink Floyd laser shows.
Are you a
Pink
Floyd fan?
I think I have to be at this point because I've heard it so much.
I was gonna say, that's a great answer, Kev. Yeah.
How long have you been there?
I started at Buff State in 2006.
Oh, okay. So, and you come from a small town by Providence in Massachusetts. Say the name of the town again. I'm sorry.
Rehoboth.
Rehoboth?
Yeah.
Oh.
So wow, you good know job, Jim. You did good on that one.
Yeah, that was good.
So you know all about the snow and everything. You settled right in here. And tell us the things you've been doing over there at the Ferguson since you got here.
Well, I came to Buff State just as a faculty member in 2006, like I said, but I didn't become director of the planetarium until 2010. At that time, we still had the old planetarium, but then that closed down as part of the construction of our new science and math complex. We had an inflatable planetarium for a few years, and then now, like we said, this new one opened up in 2010 or 2021.
You gotta get everybody down there, Mark.
Yeah. Have you guys been?
No, I have not. I have not. Yeah. So we've went over what we'll see. Are we going to see when we look at it? I've seen like these videos where there's like kind of like a haze around the moon. Like
I wanted to actually mention that because as you get closer to totality, you may have heard of Bailey's beads. That's kind of when you're looking at the sun and there's low areas on the moon and the last bits of sunlight are getting through those low areas like valleys and low craters. It looks kind of like beads on a bracelet.
Okay.
A lot of people talk about those, but you don't really see those just by looking with your eyes with eclipse glasses. You need like a telescope or something. But what you want to look for is with your eclipse glasses, as you're watching the sun just before totality, the crescent of the sun will get thinner and thinner, and then there'll be like one bright area left, and the rest of the area around the moon will start to glow, and it'll look like a diamond ring. It's called the diamond ring effect. Wow. That only lasts for a few seconds, and then it disappears. And once you can't see anything more, that's when you're in totality. And I think that's what you were mentioning is that corona, that corona, kind of outer part of the sun that you don't normally see.
Can't get away from that.
And
corona.
What is the danger of actually looking at it without the glasses?
Yeah, to think about the danger of looking at the sun isn't any more dangerous during an eclipse than it is on a normal day. And, you know, we're not going outside right now and looking at the sun because we know better. It's going to hurt our eyes. If we stare at it, it'll cause us to go blind. But the thing that's a little bit more dangerous during an eclipse is that people know that there's an eclipse happening. So if they don't have eclipse glasses, they might try to squint and see the eclipse happening. The thing is, you're not going to see it because the sun is too bright, but you're also going to damage your eyes. So we want to just make sure that people are aware that, you know, in order to protect your eyes and see the partial phases, you have to use your eclipse glasses.
Yeah, I get it now because I thought it was going to be more like how the apocalypse starts. Like, you know, just like too many people.
Looking
like,
at Medusa, turn to stone.
Yeah. And then we're like, we did it ourselves. We just couldn't look away. They told us not to.
But it's also important to remember just during totality, when the moon is totally covering the sun, you want to take off your eclipse glasses and look at the sun. That's the time it's safe to do that.
Okay.
And it's not just the corona that you see, but you'll be able to see some stars, some planets.
Yep. Yeah. That's why we had you on, Kevin, because you hear so many things. So we had to go right to the expert and have you on, don't we?
Yeah, we need experts. In our high school, our triple beams were bolted to the table, you know? Like, that was the kind of place we came from, you know?
Everybody's,
like, learning things as an adult now, but, like, you must get this a lot, like, the Joe Rogan effect of, like, all your questions, right? Like, where you're like, come on, like...
Space and aliens.
Yeah.
It's fun to talk about.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, all right. I didn't know if it was like, oh, that's not science.
Well, it's not, but... it's still fun to talk about.
Yeah, it's so fun.
How does that play in, though? Like, does it, like... we got another 15 minutes. I'm going to get him to talk about...
Bob Lazar.
I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, if the person that's asking these questions is kind of open to learning about them, it's fun to talk about because it's a teaching opportunity. But sometimes you get the people that they believe what they believe and you're not going to convince them otherwise.
Well, you got a pretty piece of what are you working with equipment wise down there? What are you seeing?
In the planetarium?
Yeah.
Is there a telescope? Is that a different kind of thing that we're talking about?
Yeah, actually, that's a good point. With the planetarium, you know, we're inside this hemisphere, half of a ball, and we're projecting things onto the screen.
Sure.
On like an observatory where you'd have telescopes looking out.
Oh, look at us. Look at us. I told you the triple beams are bolted down.
But you still get to look at a lot of space, though, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's your passion. You're a space nerd. You know what I mean?
Is that what's on my bio there?
It was everywhere I looked. I hate to tell you.
That was your translation, right?
No, they kept saying that right here.
Wait, maybe they didn't.
Professor in a self-described space nerd. Blame Janet Gramazza, not me. I'm just going off the facts. Everything I went off of was basically...
Yeah, I'm sure it was facts.
Tyson.
See some of this stuff.
Yeah. But it's got to be interesting. You've got to be a passion of the moon and space, what's going on. This is like your World Series going on right now.
Yeah, you know, with some of my research looking at actually images of Mars, so, you know, not through telescopes, but looking at images from spacecraft, and you get a lot of questions about life on Mars and everything, but like you said, this is, you know, this once-in-a-lifetime, everything coming together, and, not to be too punny, but, you know, lining up to have this happening.
Pun away.
Yeah, we are going to miss this event for the Masters.
And we talked
once-in-a-lifetime chance, or...
Once in a lifetime with once in a lifetime. Would you ever think that? Only in space, man.
I mean, I think we know what you'd pick.
We knew, yeah.
You'd pick the eclipse?
I would pick the eclipse,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh,
man. Hurt my feelings here. Well, I already went to the Masters, too.
In your research, what have you fell in love with, especially going into research about the eclipse, other planets, other parts of the galaxy, things like that?
I guess what I really like is just the idea that when we see, say, images from Mars or images from the, you know, orbiters around the moon and all these things, it's great to remember that it's not, you know, one person that led to that. It's usually thousands of people working to create this mission or whatever that return these, and then the results of that are spread out to millions of people. So it's kind of a, you know, the connecting of everybody.
I've often thought, where are these drones flying around on Mars yet? I know you got rovers.
There was one. There was
Do they got drones flying around down there?
There was one. Yeah.
Really? There is one.
Yeah. The most recent U.S. Rover Perseverance brought a test of a. They call it a helicopter, but it's really a drone. But it has.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it was called Ingenuity. It was really a test of the engineering idea that you could have a helicopter or a small drone on Mars, and it exceeded their expectations on how it would operate. And so now they're talking about sending more to Mars, sending them to Titan. Because Titan has an atmosphere, it's one of the moons around Saturn.
I was actually telling Mark
about the rings around Mars,
about Phobos, moon of Phobos.
Phobos and Deimos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Deimos. And Phobos one day will disintegrate and turn into a ring of Mars. I found that out the other day. Yep. That was pretty interesting.
It could also hit the planet, but
it could, well.
One in a billion, or is that what it is?
No, that's another one. That's the lottery with Apophis. You know about Apophis. Was it April 13th, 2036?
If you say so.
I'm saying that they're saying that there's a one in a 100 million, this was Neil deGrasse, that it could hit a keyhole through Earth and land in Santa Monica.
One in a billion.
Won't kill us all, though. So Apophis, look that up. Yeah.
Yeah, since it's still a few years away, I haven't worried too much about it.
Yeah, but, well, that's right, because you got a lot to worry about with the eclipse. And Mark was talking about, surprised that we haven't heard more from, like, nut job cults with the eclipse that are living in barbaric times still. You know, because the bad omens of the lunar eclipse, have you ran into any crazy... Solar eclipse, I'm sorry. Any crazy people about warning you that this isn't a good thing or anything like that?
Not yet. Well, that's good. I was talking to some other folks last week about planning and everything for different events, and somebody asked if they should be expecting people to show up, kind of not really protesting, but kind of end of the world sort of thing, and
yeah,
what to watch out for. But I haven't heard that being a problem.
That's good.
I think they're all going to stay in their basement.
Is there anything that's going to, like, so we have like the web camera out there. Do you guys get a lot of, like, do you just get all the photos and everything? Is that like,
well, a lot of that is just available to the public. Like, I'm sure you guys are checking it out every day. So what we do in the planetarium, though, is like every, maybe once every year over the last couple of years, we have one of our programs focused on new results from the Webb telescope. But we don't have like a special link to it or anything like that.
Is that like a major upgrade?
Oh yeah, yeah. So you probably know about the Hubble Space Telescope. It's been in orbit around Earth 34 years or something like that now.
Is it the oldest one though?
I don't know. It probably
maybe
is.
Maybe it's the oldest, farthest. You know what I mean by that?
It's been operating a long time. Yeah,
it's the best one left.
You know, that last long time, it really changed our understanding of astronomy. And now with Webb, it's 100 times or 10,000 times or something like that better than Hubble. So it's giving them this jump forward in our understanding of astronomy.
And we're finding so many planets that we didn't even know about. You turn around like, oh, there's a planet that is habitable. But it's 13 trillion light years.
How do you say it now? Nevenchnup. I don't even know how to say that anymore.
What is it?
I don't know the acronym or whatever it is for all the planets.
Oh, in our solar system.
Yeah, the solar system, right.
Were you talking about like planets around other stars? Like,
They're just popping up. It's fascinating to me. I mean, there's one moon. What's the moon? Is it Venus's moon? Maybe? No.
Venus doesn't have a moon.
Venus doesn't have a moon. Maybe Uranus? And I don't mean to make a joke about that. I mean, that's just...
You have to, right?
Yeah, you have to. But yeah, but it's interesting with space, and this is a... Have NASA reached out to Buff State at all, or any of the bigwigs?
The bigwigs, but NASA. You're probably aware that NASA's having a big presence in Niagara Falls for the eclipse. It's one of their main points along the path of totality. So they're doing a lot between like that Friday and Monday of the weekend there. And we've connected with them over the last couple of months. So they're going to be here in Buffalo Friday, Saturday, Sunday before the eclipse at the Museum of Science. And then on the Sunday, April 7th, they're going to be at Buff State for like a NASA day at Buff State between 10 and 2. So there's going to be a couple of talks by scientists and engineers. There's going to be activities. They're going to have moon rocks there between 11:30 and 12:30. So it'll be a fun time to have them on campus.
Yeah. That's awesome. What's the best place, they're saying, in the United States to see it, other than Buff State, Hoyer Field?
Well, besides that, just, you know, I guess.
Well, like all along the path, is it all the same?
You see the thing, like we've all seen the diagram by now. What is the number one spot? Is it like a place in Quebec or something?
I guess the best place would be down in southwestern Mexico.
Really?
Because that's where we're
going down there. Okay.
Yeah, because that's where the longest amount of totality would be. So you have the longest amount of darkness. So it's like 4 minutes and 27 seconds or something like that. By the time it gets here, it's a shorter shadow or shorter totality. So it's 3 minutes and 45-ish seconds. Yeah.
Are you getting better questions on the field trips than today?
No, they're about the same. Yeah. As for the fourth graders are coming.
I knew it. No, but I was looking into like the moon and the history of the solar eclipses and the moon landing. I believe people went to the moon. I'm not one of those morons. Okay. But it seemed like if you look back, you as an astronomer and a space nerd. I mean, they keep saying that about him.
We're going to have to get a t-shirt.
They keep saying it.
We will get you a t-shirt. Was it inspiring and it needed to happen to go to the moon? That's the one thing I say to people. Not that it happened. It happened and it needed to happen at that time. Do you guys look into the history of it when you're you know, teaching about the moon and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to talk about the space race and, you know, the yeah. reasons for going to the moon and what was found with the moon. But I think it's also important to talk about why it's taken so long to go back. You know,
I wonder that too.
You know, a lot of it was with the space race. There was that, you know, race with the Soviet Union to show technological advances, and part of that was going to the moon. But after that, there wasn't a lot of support in, say, Congress and the White House for spending money to continue sending people to the moon. So a lot of the money after that was put into things like there was a space station, was it Skylab during the 70s, and then the shuttle program. But once we get into the 90s, there was a lot more investment in exploring the solar system with missions to other planets, and you know, now we're preparing to send people back to the moon with the Artemis program. So it's you know, it's things change over time. You know,
I wonder about the moon maintenance up there, because they say it's dirty up in
the
moon.
Yeah.
A lot of I really went deep, didn't I?
He was listening to Pink Floyd when I went in the house. And he's like, listen to this one. I'm like, how long do you think we're going to be here?
I'm just saying, it's very dirty. And you look at what we've done with our lakes and rivers and oceans and stuff. Who's regulating the space junk up there? I often wonder about that, too.
Yeah. I mean, with the moon, you know, at least at this point, the good news is that there isn't too much junk left behind, because there haven't been too many missions there. But but if there's, you know, a long-term presence on the moon, there's going to be, like you said, trash and stuff like that. I'm sure there's some office in NASA that's thinking about that, but I'm not sure what they're thinking about.
Is there going to be another speech that's like, Mars is there and that's why we're going, you know?
There have already been a couple of those.
Yeah, there have. I don't know.
And then they don't lead anywhere. Yeah. But they, you know, my own personal opinion is that we'll send people to Mars someday.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's a big rush to do it. We want to learn more about the planet itself with robots before, you know, what I kind of joke is, what if we send people to point A and then we find out we should have sent them to point B? And, you know, that would have been a much more interesting place. But I also think the idea of that we're going to have like colonies of people living on Mars someday isn't really going to happen, because it's such a hard place to keep people alive.
Travel to.
Yeah, it takes 6 or 7 months to get there. There's radiation. The atmosphere is, you know, 1% of the thickness of our atmosphere. It's carbon dioxide. It's cold.
There'll be a lot of studying before there's ever.
Yeah, it's like wild that like the moon, how long were they gone for the moon? Like 10 days, 11 days? Like,
is that what it was? It's 240,000 miles away, I think.
284.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like 3 days to get there each way, and then depending on the mission, they spent anywhere from like a day to a week or so there.
I hope I'm there one.
Yeah. The only thing I really know about anything in this, like, there's a They Might Be Giants song that was all about like science, and then like somebody went and disproved everything. So I'm like, shit. In the song I remembered.
Everything you thought you knew.
Yeah, it's disproven. And like, I'll say something and be like, I don't know which part of this is even false anymore. I could be right. But like, so like the billionaires that went to space, like, do you think that they just want to be like the guys in the novels that they read? Do they want to be like Vonnegut's, like, you know, is that really, was there any point to it?
I mean, my guess is they have a high opinion of themselves, and they're like, well, I'm sending people into space, I should go too. And there's that whole argument of whether some of them actually went into space because they didn't go really that high up. But the idea, like, you know, with Elon Musk and sending, you know, colonizing Mars, and he's going to be the king of Mars or something like that, I don't think that's ever going to happen, because like we're saying, that it's hard to live there. But somebody was saying that what's probably going to happen with Mars, once we do send people, it'll be more like Antarctica, where we have a research station and people kind of cycle in and out, because otherwise...
We kind of know what's going on, but we really don't know what's going on.
This guy, like, he's you just said the right place.
Antarctica?
He can't.
What do you mean we don't know what's going on?
Well, I think we know what's going on. It's just, it's... I think there's a lot of testing going on down there for good things. I think they're looking into space down in Antarctica.
There's some telescopes.
Oh, yeah, there's telescopes there.
Because you were talking about, like, the things that orbit polar... What is it? Oh. I forget what it was.
The polar orbiting satellites.
Right. Yeah. Like there wasn't many for like a long time, right?
Well, you have to launch them from a different place. Sure. So, yeah, I think when they were launching, at least from the U.S., they were launching from Florida first, and so you get more orbits around the equator. But if you launch from California, you can get the polar ones.
Yeah, I'm fascinated with Antarctica. I don't think we know too much about it.
Yeah, me too. I think we should go field trip.
Yeah.
That's your next podcast, right?
Yeah.
Live from Antarctica.
Ancient diseases are melting into the water. I mean, that's really the thought, right?
Space is interesting, and it's probably
you're like, I can't say anything on this.
I'm holding up a sign.
Space is interesting, and it's the ultimate inspiration. I feel we were talking about songs about space.
Was there something that inspired? What was the thing that inspired you?
People ask me this a lot, like, how did I get into what I'm doing? But I think, you know, as a kid, I was, you know, looking up at the sky and playing in the dirt and stuff that kids normally do. And then with the shuttle program, I was like 10 when the first shuttle launched. So being really interested in that and watching that happen thinking about the planets and, like I said, playing in the dirt. So, I was fortunate enough that I was able to go into college to study astronomy and physics. And the part of astronomy that I liked the most were the planets and actually the solid surfaces. So in graduate school, I ended up doing geology and, the rest is history. So. Yeah.
Nothing to do with Star Wars. Nothing.
Well, I love Star Wars too. Yeah.
Yeah, we had a bet. Did we both bet that you were a Star Wars?
Well, the science nerd, you know, you have to.
Yeah. Hey, listen, they wrote that.
He brought it. He's Janet. The only guys that are know that I'm actually buy that gets the paper that gets the paper delivered, and he's always mad about when it comes. It's almost like it's I don't know what's worse, Twitter. If it's he gets up and sees that Twitter says something stupid, or if the paper just isn't there.
Somebody stealing it, or it just doesn't get delivered.
Yeah, we just had a guy on from the Buffalo News, and we couldn't say anything bad about it, so I guess we'll do it here.
They actually, the Buffalo News, about a month or so ago, they reached out to a few people, thanks, and they were trying to plan their whole eclipse months, actually. So they had a meeting, I guess, with like all hands and just brainstorming, and they came up with like some like 50 different ideas for stories. So, you know, and I'm sure they've come up with more since then, but
they really haven't been helpful. Like, this is where I would go, because a lot of people are coming here, and I know a guy from Texas coming here, and I don't know why he just doesn't go to Houston, because it's happening right there, isn't it?
Yeah, Dallas, or is it in Dallas?
Yeah, like kind of like Austin, I think, near Houston. Yeah. And
so I keep telling people, have a plan B in case. It's not what you expected. Like, this would be a beautiful day for you, the sun, like we have tonight. But there's not really any guidance by local officials, I say. And I'm not trying to get anybody jammed up or anything, but I wish there would be a map to come out. And maybe they are in the next couple of days. I think they should.
Like the different viewing locations, you mean?
Different viewing locations, maybe to steer the crowd. So there isn't this jam up that we think that there's going to be on the road.
Tell people we're a bike friendly place. Oh, yeah. You know, but
things like that.
I don't know. Maybe more people will just stay in their car because they're scared. I don't know.
Well, one of the things that it's not a map that that's a good idea. But Visit Buffalo Niagara, they've been really active in terms of having a website with the eclipse, and they're trying to have everything that's happening. And but it's a lot to keep up with, as you've probably noticed. Maybe a couple months ago, there were maybe 5 places that were having view events. Now everywhere is having one, which is great. Yeah.
They announced, don't have any more events. Stay home. That's what some of the officials have said, which is very eye-rolling. And it was funny. Every day, every 4 hours, somebody was announcing an event. And I was like, good for you. Make that money back that you lost a couple years ago. And it's great for the area because this is a great place to go to events. Like, even like you go over there, like this place is jammed. Go over to Dundee, you know, a little hole in the wall. Go here. There's this guy down here. What did I say his name is?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We didn't know if it was you or not because he said he was from
what
one
was
of
his
the
name?
Colleges, Galaxy Ron or something.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Galaxy.
Yeah, Dr. Galaxy, and this guy called himself.
Yeah, and he's saying.
Is this the same guy?
he's telling the state that they should put a plaque over here because it'll be one of the best views.
He's like, that's something. That's an idea.
Yeah, it's an idea. That's great.
You're like Mr. Galaxies.
Yeah.
Quite a nickname.
So
Jim,
you gotta,
Jim did want you to come up with a nickname for a cocktail. Maybe you'll have to make it first.
Yeah, a nickname for a cocktail for something with the history of the solar eclipse or something.
Wow.
Like something scientific. Hmm. Yeah, and we'll name it a cocktail.
What would be in it?
Yeah, whatever you want. How about some gin? I got to get rid of some gin.
How about Kevin's Eclipse?
Whoa. Kevin's Eclipse. No.
I'm not that egotistical.
and you know what? That's been fun for the area because there's a lot of specials that are going on. People are getting creative. So I really hope Western New York cashes in and that there's some sunlight here. You know what I mean?
What do you think gets more songs, the sun or the moon?
Trying to think of different songs and they're kind of equal.
Maybe
the
sun might get more play. I don't know.
I mean, it depends how you use it, because if it's like something about light, you know, that could be the sun.
Right.
Yeah. I always think that song Corona by the Minutemen. That's a good one. Very good one.
We were looking up moon, or I didn't even think about sun, but sunrise, tequila, sunrise. I've heard a lot of people argue with me what's going to be the song during it. Because, you know, there's always got to be a playlist for everything in fucking life now.
Apparently, Spotify has an eclipse playlist, and it's 2 hours long.
It's really? Yeah.
For 4 minutes?
Get your ready.
No, 2.5 hours.
Oh, yeah. Wait, 2.5 hours? All right. So how many times do you play Pink Floyd's whatever in 2.5 hours, Jim?
What? I don't know. Maybe.
What would be your perfect Pink Floyd playlist? Play it on through the
albums.
Well,
you would have to listen to Dark Side of the Moon.
It's all dark.
Matter of fact, it's all dark.
No, actually, the we're seeing the dark side of the moon during a solar eclipse.
That's
the other side is the daytime side.
Yeah.
That'd be a good song.
the other side's the daytime side.
Maybe Back in Black.
Oh, so you're going heavy. Scared the shit out of everyone.
Maybe that should be the name of the drink.
Back in Black. Maybe like an espresso martini kind of deal.
There you go.
What's your favorite drink? We'll make something for you, Kev.
You didn't tell me there was going to be homework. I'll have to think about it a bit.
See, I'm prepared for class.
I didn't get the assignment.
I was going through, there's Moon Lore. This is the most fascinating. I played it for him today. I don't know if you know this. So I was going down a lot of moon facts because it's an eclipse and you're a moon guy, right?
Sure.
Space nerd, as they say.
Yep.
The moon rising illusion. Do you know about this?
Yeah.
Yep. Isn't that fascinating? Explain it to people because you probably do a better job than I can. I thought it was very fascinating.
I'll try. Okay. And actually, somebody mentioned this to me a couple of days ago.
A fifth grader.
No, it was. it was an adult, but how they were, a couple of days ago, or maybe it was last month, but they were driving down the road as the sun was rising and. Actually, not the sun, sorry. The moon was rising. And it was this huge moon, kind of orange color. So that's what you're talking about, this illusion that you have these, sometimes you see this huge moon rising, and then later in the evening, it's up in the sky and it's small again. The reason it's an illusion is because the size of the moon isn't changing. It's actually the same size. It's just that when it's at the horizon like that, you have the sizes of trees and houses to compare it to.
It's in our brain.
You don't have the universe to...
Right. When it's in the sky, it's just there's nothing around it. So something you can do to test that idea that it's an illusion is you take like a coin, and when it's big like that, you cover the moon with a coin and remember how far away from your eye the coin is. And then later in the night when it looks small, do that again and it will be the same size.
See, it's cool. And then the blood moon, there's... talk about the blood moon. You got to know about the blood moon.
Right? Yeah, so during a total lunar eclipse is when the moon gets into the main part of Earth's shadow, and because of the way that the sunlight gets bent through Earth's atmosphere and then it hits the moon, the red colors hit the moon more, and you get that reddish color of the moon. It looks kind of like a blood moon.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Yeah, there's also in that video, he was saying that like the... it's like vapors from Earth give it the color.
Like when it starts to, the sun, when it goes down,
more
it goes
in June.
Red. When
in June
it goes
you'll
red
see
and
it.
Orange, this is like the vapors from like Earth that you're seeing the sun through.
You mean like the atmosphere?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Atmosphere.
Yeah.
See, well, we're bolted to the table.
Go Tigers.
But you're right. Yeah, when you have the sun setting or rising and you see it kind of orange, you're looking through more of the atmosphere. So instead of the blue light that you see during the daytime, you're seeing more of the red light. It's just the way that the different colors get scattered through the atmosphere. Yep.
And the moon is... It's kind of our offensive line. It blocks a lot of shit. In layman's terms, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, the gravitational pull of it has protected some objects from hitting Earth. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's real dented up.
Just a bit, yeah.
But I seen this one guy. Now, when I was watching anything, I went with pure science, like the Degrassi, Tyson, and National Geographic. That's what my reference is when I was getting ready for this.
You didn't go down the wormholes.
I did. But this is what I'm sticking to and what I believe in. No things that hit it, no drag marks of the boulders, of the asteroids or meteors that hit it. Why is that?
So the reason you don't have like something hitting and then skidding across the surface of the moon is when you have an impact like that, most of the objects are hitting at like 20,000 miles an hour. So it's this huge release of energy, kind of like an explosion, and there's nothing left to really start skidding down.
Okay.
So it's this...
It's not like swiping the moon. Poof.
Right. Yeah, you have a... it hits the surface, you have pressure going down into the moon, then it rebounds and ejects a bunch of material out.
Yeah.
Now, there are some cases where you do have an asteroid coming in at a really low angle, and it does kind of skip, but that's pretty rare.
What's on your radar now that's going to fly at us? Anything?
The only thing on my mind these days is the eclipse.
It's the eclipse. And then after the eclipse, you're going to take a break, right? Where are you going? You're going on vacation?
Well, I still have to teach class.
So you got to wait till the end of the school year?
Yeah.
Maybe go somewhere?
Yeah. It's not really a vacation, but in July, I'm going to an international planetarium conference.
Well, that's
and
good.
I'm going to present about... preparing for the eclipse because other places in the world
They're
are going to be experiencing.
Okay, right.
It's coming to them soon, right?
Right. So kind of talking about like lessons learned, what happened, and
the scientific method.
You could talk about this podcast. Go on.
Yeah.
These guys, they'll get everybody ready. They sold a lot of tickets to Coyer Field.
But like, okay, so what classes do you teach?
Different classes in geology and astronomy are what I teach. So sometimes they're introductory level, the gen ed for a lot of non-science majors, but then also upper division classes in, like my area is basically surface processes, so things like how glaciers and rivers and things like that shape the surface of a planet, whether it's Earth or other planets. One of the more fun things to do is like doing research, but including undergraduate students at Buff State in that research. So I have students that have done research looking at images from Mars, figuring out the history of Mars, using an instrument, ground penetrating radar to look at what's below the shallow surface. We've used that in cemeteries in the area to look for old graves that don't have markers anymore.
Really?
So kind of all over the place.
So, because I always think of it like you're not buying and you're not selling things. So it's like, what's the lure? Like, what lures people in? And obviously, it's using high tech equipment and
fascination,
things like that.
Mars, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. It's
it's
like we kind of mentioned before. Like for me personally, it was something that was, really fun to think about and kind of look at the stars and follow the space program as a kid. And I've been fortunate to do that as a career. Mm-hmm. And in those like gen ed classes that I mentioned, some of the best comments I get are from the non-science majors that say that they didn't think they liked science, and then after taking a class, whether it's in geology or solar system or astronomy, like they really like it. So obviously they're not going to do it as a career, but they have an appreciation for it, and hopefully it sticks with them.
Yeah,
the mountain on Mars fascinates me. People don't realize how big this fucking mountain is.
Olympus Mons, yeah.
Yeah. It is, what is it, Mount St. Helens and something else combined. It doesn't even come close to it, right?
Yeah, it's like, what is it? almost 20 miles tall.
Yeah.
And in terms of size,
almost out of the atmosphere, almost, isn't it? Like, it's borderline.
Where is this?
Mars.
It's on Mars. It's the biggest mountain in the solar system. It's a volcano.
Yeah.
It's about as wide as, I usually describe it as either being the size of Arizona, or if you don't know how big Arizona is, it's about as wide as the distance from Buffalo to New York City.
Yeah.
So it's wow. It's huge. Yeah.
Huge. What kind of minerals are we finding that are on Mars? Talking about studying Mars. That fascinates me.
Yeah, a lot of the rocks on Mars are very similar to rocks on Earth. They're basically volcanic rocks. So there are things like basalt, so the types of rocks that you find in Hawaii. But then there's also basalt that's been altered or changed by water flowing through it. There are some other types of rocks, but it's a lot of volcanism, a lot of volcanic rocks.
And you got the ice caps on Mars. Mm-hmm. People don't realize that.
Right. So talk there's about
the what is it? North. It's north. Right?
North and south poles north have ice. South poles, yeah. But what's interesting about Mars is it's so cold there that our ice caps are water ice, right? On Mars, there are two types of ice. There's water ice, but there's also carbon dioxide ice, which is dry ice, right?
Really?
So, because it's so cold and the atmosphere on Mars is made out of carbon dioxide. So the polar caps on Mars, the water ice stays frozen, but the carbon dioxide ice sort of sublimates. It doesn't melt because it doesn't become a liquid, but it goes from being a solid to a gas in the springtime and summertime, and then it freezes back into ice in the wintertime. So you kind of have this alternating back and forth between the north and south pole of carbon dioxide.
And everybody says it, like Musk says, who's like Lex Luthor? Let's see. I mean, I like Mr. Luthor, don't get me wrong, but...
Musk has a lair somewhere, right? Yeah,
I hope God. So. I want a lair.
Like the
I kind of do.
Lair. Yeah.
Almost injecting something into Mars, I've heard him talk about, where it would help gain oxygen on the planet. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, terraforming?
Yes, yes. Tell the listeners about that. They probably like to hear it from you and not me.
I'd like to hear from you.
It's like a shot, Marky. They inject it and then poof.
It's like a mob light. After a couple werewolf killers in the back.
Yeah, this is like a marmite.
No, terraforming is basically, right now the atmosphere of Mars is very thin. It's carbon dioxide. And like you said, how could we make it more Earth-like? How could we make it a thicker atmosphere? How could we make it have oxygen? And one of the ideas, and including one that Musk has talked about, is, well, let's just take some nuclear weapons and melt the ice caps.
Yeah, that's a little dangerous to me.
There's a problem with that called radiation, right?
Yeah.
But also, even if you did that, it would still take like thousands or hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of years to change the atmosphere. So it's not something that happens overnight.
You could use a hydrogen bomb, though. No fallout.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, that's true.
Science.
I was awake for a little bit in Mr. Trozinski's class. You know that guy? You know Trozinski?
Jim, they all don't know each other.
We do have science nerd conventions, but not everybody can make it. Yeah.
Listen, I kind of go to those too. Pretty good at chess. But the moon lore is great. And Mars, I can't wait. And I tell people about this mountain in the last couple of days. I can't wait till we have a little drone to show people how big this thing is. I've seen it in photos, and look it up if you're listening, where they put our two biggest mountains. I think the one's in Hawaii, maybe, and then
probably
the other one's the Alps.
Mauna Loa.
I think the other one's the Alps,
because
the Swiss
it's
Alps.
There. We will go there.
Yeah, because it's there. You must go there. That's what JFK said. And I'm not a conspiracy guy with the moon. Here's what I do think about the moon. I'll throw the two. I was telling him earlier. We went, no doubt. Okay, but they needed proof, and the proof wasn't up to snuff, so they came up with proof, and they filmed something. That's what I think. I think there was some doctoring going on. Let's say that. I think the original video is what it is, but I think they doctored it. I think we went to the moon, though. I'm not one of these wackos.
You've said that a couple of times now. Like you're not quite sure. Yeah. The videos have been altered, but I wouldn't necessarily call it doctored. They've been altered.
Altered. Okay. I'll agree with you.
But for reasons like any videos are altered, where the contrast has been fixed. They've actually removed the delay because there's like a 1.5 second delay in the communications.
And you give these people a window. And yep. they take it, you know what I mean? And any conspiracy theory.
Oh yeah, sure. But, yeah. It's interesting when you look at the idea that, you know, we haven't landed on the moon, and you look at the reasons that are given for why we didn't have or why we didn't go, like the proof that we didn't go, all of that proof can be disproven.
What was it blamed on money mostly?
The
why
idea
we
that
weren't
like
on it, moon yeah. missions. I mean. Yeah. And a lot of people I remember making fun of Space Force, right?
I made fun of Space Force.
But now Space Force is, hey, we're going places. Is it good? Space Force is good?
I mean, Space Force is more like, it's a part of, well, it started out as part of the Air Force, and it's a Defense Department sort of thing. It's not NASA.
Right.
A defense thing.
They're deflecting things.
Yeah, I made fun of them more for the uniforms. Like it looks too much like Star Trek.
It really does. Like, but who were the marketing guys that came up with this one?
But I mean, Star Trek is good. So, in terms of thinking about going to the moon and the conspiracy theory, I actually have a friend who years ago was editing a book that was trying to disprove that we went to the moon, and he would contact me to kind of say, what do you think about this? One of the things that just stands out is that there was a link to a website that had a video of like supposedly Neil Armstrong coming down and like he's about to step on the moon and some lights fall down in the background. The author was using that as proof in the book. All you have to do is go to the website and down at the bottom it says like click here to see how we do this, and it was like somewhere in Europe some students were doing a film project kind of making fun of the idea that conspiracy theory. So
I tell everybody, make sure you know where that came from, like the footprint. You ever see the conspiracy on the footprint? Doesn't match the footprint of
the spacesuit.
A reason for that, and a scientific reason. It's in fucking space. it's not like you're in San Diego, 70 degrees, no wind. Right. I mean, that's so. I have Kev. I'm not a wacko. I told you. You do gotta look at count. I set him up for that one, Mark. But
do you ever get has there ever been like enthusiasts that figured some science out? Like, has that been a thing?
Actually, a lot of amateur astronomers do really great work where they, you know, they're observing objects, whether it's a planet or the moon or stars, and you know they're able to have these observations that then tie into what I guess you would call professional astronomers are doing. So there's a lot of work done by, enthusiasts. There's also, NASA has a big citizen science program where just anybody can sign up for different programs and collect data in different ways. An example of that is a cloud monitoring program where you just take a picture of clouds in your area and the timestamp and everything, and you upload it to a server and it somehow gets added to a database.
And then you're part of the data?
Yeah, you're adding to it, yep.
So could people, like, so that happens, that gets put into research and people write papers and you get included?
I don't think you're listed as an author, but your data becomes part of the database. Yeah, absolutely. If people are interested, they could check into NASA's GLOBE program. On NASA Day at Buff State on April 7th, one of the presentations is going to be about the GLOBE program and how people can get involved in that.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, talk about this Saturday and Sunday while we're on it.
Yeah, so on...
give the dates so they know.
So Friday, April 5th and Saturday, April 6th, we're going to be running planetarium programs about the eclipse. They're probably going to be sold out by the time this airs because they've been selling out. We just added three more and they're already half full. But between 11 and 4 on Saturday, April 6th, We're going to be selling eclipse glasses. So if people still need to get their glasses just outside of the planetarium in the science and math complex at Buff State. And then on April 7th, between 10 and 2, we have NASA Day at Buffalo State, which is where I have a talk by a NASA engineer, a talk by a NASA scientist about those globe citizen science programs. The moon rocks are going to be there between 11:30 and 12:30. There's going to be activities.
Cool for the kids, yeah.
Yeah. There's.
I remember when I was a kid, always the science museum, that kind of stuff. And now you're probably in the whole merry-go-round of field trips, obviously.
Right. But I still go to science museums, and I like to touch the rocks and everything.
Oh, it's fascinating. So what are you doing April 5th?
That's a date.
So that would be the Friday.
Friday.
Yeah, so we're doing
Camp Pub.
Okay.
Yeah, we have our own comedy show that night.
I was gonna invite him if you wanted to come to our comedy show and let loose. You've been working your ass off, Kevin. I'm very proud of you.
The moon is more important. The eclipse is what's
really
important.
Is.
And you're not crazy.
No, I'm not. I told you, I'm not a wacko. No, you play well.
You're good.
Yeah, I seen. I like people pubbing the events, and I hope people see this opportunity to come and see what you have to offer at the planetarium, because not only school children, but just people that...
Yeah, when do you guys do the Pink Floyd events and stuff like that? Just look at the website.
Yeah, we usually do, we have our laser shows that are Pink Floyd. We do we have The Wall, and we have Dark Side of the Moon.
We'll be down there.
We'll do one of those once a year. Sometimes twice a year. Right now, our laser show is Taylor Swift.
Oh,
Taylor Swift with the stars, huh?
Well,
what are you looking at when the music's going?
It's laser projections of either images or more abstract things. The laser shows are really cool. They you sit back, you're listening to the music, and you're seeing the visuals. So
we'll take the kids, Mark.
Yeah, we rotate through different shows every 5 to 6 months. That's awesome. Switch it up a bit.
Yeah.
When
the aliens land, it'll be a whole different story.
Yeah. In terms of information about Eclipse stuff that we're doing, people can check out our website, which is eclipse.buffalostate.edu. But general planetarium stuff is planetarium.buffalostate.edu.
And you're very proud of it. And I actually look back in those reviews that you could look up for your students.
My students, oh.
Yeah, let me give you a couple. You simplify the content as the perfect professor, one said. That's a good compliment, dude.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So you're more of a common sense, let's get to the roots of the, whether it be a math problem or when we're talking about space or anything like that. You get to the content, it seems like, in all the reviews that I read.
Yeah, I think it's important for, especially students that are non-scientists, and that's most of the people that come to the planetarium too. They're not science people, but they want to learn some information. So instead of getting into all the details that they might not remember and probably don't need to know, just focus on the main points that they're going to remember. And I think one of my goals is to help people have this appreciation for how science is done, why it's important, and things going on like the eclipse that everyone can take part in and know a little bit about what's going on and enjoy it.
Yeah, and when you're listening to Joe Rogan and you're interested about something, you'll field the question for him if you have what you got.
Sure. Yeah.
I think that program, and I always say that he's the Johnny Carson now. It's like the Tonight Show. And he's really opened people's mind about science and things like that. I know it's probably made you guys as professors a little difficult. Like, oh my God, another Joe Rogan fucking tic-tac question. But thanks for being a good sport. And anything we could ever do for you, Kev, other than have a couple beers with you, because you deserve it. You've been working hard. And like we say to all our guests, Kevin Williams, you are now licensed to talk. Thanks for stopping by, brother.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
The great British explorer, George Mallory, was to die on Mount Everest, was asked, why did he want to climb it? He said, because it is there.